Welcome to episode 21 of season 9 of Movie Ramen, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the final two Die Hard movies, Die Hard 4 and 5, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again to finish off his stint for this half of the season is Alan Sanders of The Alan Sanders Show. Welcome back to the show, Alan.
Hey, thank you for having me back, and I'm all refreshed from yesterday's barbecues and fireworks, and looking forward to seeing what kind of fireworks we might have in this episode.
Yeah, we're not going to have that many fireworks here. This is we're not there yet. Tomorrow's episode will have a little more fireworks than today's, but
no. Yeah, I guess we're the precursor for some ridiculous action.
yes, we are. So episode 21 begins with Farrell trying not to get caught and ends with Trey starting to get personal. So basically we ended things yesterday with Farrell on Friday with Farrell trying to keep safe from Emerson, who's been walking around and things like that. And Farrell then somehow manages to climb up the ladder. You know, he does have a little bit of upper body strength, but the shot then changes and we see him walking on a on like a catwalk. Mm-hmm. So like, we didn't even see him. You know, we see him lift his arm up to start walking. You know, start climbing up the ladder, and then the next thing you know, he's, you know, they jump shot him, and he's now on a different level. And then as he's continuing to now walk up again, climb up a ladder, which again makes no sense the way that they're doing this. You see a door close, but he's still looking up and decides that he's gonna go up the regular stairs. And then they give us another shot of the security measures on the door, locking it in more firmly, I guess you could say. And then he starts walking over to like a console that he sees on the side, holding onto his bruised left shoulder, mm-hmm. and sees, you know, I guess an ATM. No, I'm just kidding. He sees a console as to, you know, how to put in a code in order to get in. And, you know, he sees that it's the security access level 4 and sees this as a social security area. And then he hears a sound and gets a little shocked and looks around and trying to figure out what's going on. And his first reaction when he looks at this is he goes, "Hey, it's my algorithm." So, hey, it's a good thing that he's able to recognize his algorithm. That's important.
Mm-hmm.
It's important for a hacker to recognize his own fingerprints in his algorithm. Makes a lot of sense.
Did it bother you at all in this sequence? Because it technically does make sense. This guy got the message to go out, and there's a problem on 3. So he's obviously going to go up the stairs. So he's obviously left this secure room. And in the sequence of events, kind of back and forth, we see him climbing the stairs. And now, you know, the kid's climbing up the little ladder, like you said, and then coming up. And then the door is only just now closing behind the guy that must have just left. So I guess it's automatically set to close after so many seconds. Like, obviously, he opened it to go find out what's going on level 3. But for me, you had to, like, I had to mentally talk myself through that to say, okay, that does make sense. But you showed me the guy. You showed me him worried about being seen. Then the guy's climbing the stairs, and then you see the door closing. Like, well, did he go back into the room? Because why do you have to show me the door closing unless it's just to call attention to that's the room he came out of?
I think it's the call attention to the room that he came out of, because we saw him go into there before. You know, I mean, that we know.
It just felt a little weird, and trying to keep the geography in my head, I had to explain. I had to literally, okay, does this make sense? Why am I watching these scenes of the door closing, then the bars coming down, while we watch the guy go up the stairs? And I guess it's just a security measure that after a few seconds, whoever opens the door from the inside, it automatically locks and closes on itself again.
Right. It could be. It could be a security measure that they do it that way. It, you know, it's not really clear about the whole thing, But I do like the fact that you, like you said, you have to use the mental geography to realize that John is on three, but Farrell has fallen down to five, and then he works his way back up from five to four. You know, I do like that, the fact that they do that. I mean, they did it much better in the original Die Hard, where they're trying to show us the geography of who's on, the 30th floor and who's on the 31st floor and the 34th floor and all that stuff. That they did really well there. Here, it seems as if they're sort of copying it, but it still works well the way that they do it.
Yeah, it caught me off guard the first time because he kind of, and I know we haven't kind of gotten there yet. You're gonna, as we move along in this 5 minute segment, he kind of saunters in really nonchalantly. And my first thought was, well, did the guy go back in the room? Why wouldn't you be more apprehensive? How do you know there's nobody else in the room? It felt a little clunky. And I had to, once I talked myself through geography wise, it makes sense. And where the guy is going upstairs, yeah, now that makes sense. It just, a few of these things just sort of like I had to talk myself through it.
Well, he's just overly excited because he's figured out that someone is actually using his algorithm.
Well, but yeah, that's one thing. But he's got also,
But...
which we'll get to, kind of a really goofy smile when the door opens.
Oh, we're gonna get there. We will get there. And at this point, he starts praying and he goes, "Oh, please, God." And uses his access code in order to get in through the algorithm that he has set up, which again, it's really cool, the idea that he created this algorithm and sent it to Gabriel, but he still has a copy of it, knowing or a portable copy of it, not just a copy of it, trying to figure the whole thing out, which is done well. I like it. Again, they show us a little too much techie graphic stuff here to make it look cooler than it probably really is. Now that we're all used to the idea of having to use PIN numbers both on ATMs and even to sometimes access stuff on your computer or email and stuff like that, they just make it a lot busier looking with the way that it is. But it's done in a cool way. And then the door opens up and we see his face, and his face, as you said, lights up. And it really reminded me from the shot from the original Die Hard when Theo finally gets the vault opened. And you see Theo's face, and you see Christoph's face, the guy who's helping him, and it's just very, very reminiscent of that. Again, I think it's sort of an homage to it. I can't be sure, but the way it looks. And then he slowly walks into the room and is creeping along, trying to figure out what's going on. Sees all these computers, doing what they do. They're computers computing. And then he walks over to the one in the middle and sees a whole bunch of lines on the screen, which we actually get to see. Now, this goes back to what we were talking about earlier, a few weeks ago, where we saw that the number of banks that they're trying to get into. You have the FRB, the Federal Reserve Bank, and they give us a list of a whole bunch of different cities here. So you have Detroit, Milwaukee, Ocala, which is OCLA. OCALLA, which again, I have no idea what that means. Plain Oaks, another one that we talked about earlier, that makes no sense that it would fit in here. Middleton is the fake name that they used for the West Virginia city where the power plant was. Then you get Savannah, Kansas City, Middleton again, Savannah, Middleton, Atlanta. Again, they really never expected anybody to be looking at this the way that we are looking at it because. It doesn't make any sense to have the same city over and over. Even though they do get they get part of it right, because for instance, with Savannah on one of them it says slash DB slash URS slash active, and the other one is slash database slash accounts that slash all. So they're different accounts. But with the three Middleton ones, they all say the exact same thing. It says Middleton database accounts all. And you have that three different times, so they got a little sloppy
I also think the Ocala is supposed to be Ocala, Florida, but it's a typo because Ocala, Florida only has one L.
Okay, that's very possible also. But again, why would there be a Federal Reserve Bank in Ocala, Florida?
I don't know. Is there?
And I don't know. And we weren't even able to figure out when when we looked at this originally a few weeks ago, what Plain Oaks is, because it makes no sense. Plain Oaks, there's no like major city named Plain Oaks in anywhere in the continental U.S. So I figured it must be like the guy who did the graphics grew up in a little town called Plain Oaks and said, hey, probably. Wouldn't it be really funny if I put it in there and nobody will never notice? Nobody's going to be looking at this 5 minutes at a time.
Because there's only a handful of Federal Reserve banks. Like, I know Atlanta is one for real, but that would serve, I think, the whole Southeast. There's 12 total banks, so I would imagine there wouldn't be any in Florida. So I think you're right. I think these are just little tiny Easter egg for maybe they just threw it in there for whatever, never expected anybody to be able to freeze frame and look at it.
Yeah. And it works from that perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Not from a reality perspective, but it works from that perspective.
Well, I will give them credit for as far as the format showing the /, talking you're within the different sub categories of these different routes for the directory, that's mm-hmm. all correct. Like yeah. all of this is correct as far as the way it looks.
That's right.
So they did that right.
Yeah. It just doesn't make sense to have three different, three different lines that say the exact same thing.
Exactly. Yeah.
But okay. Like I said, they didn't expect us. They didn't see us coming.
The crazy thing is if you go to the far right column, even though it's there three times, it's a different sequence of numbers associated.
It doesn't really that doesn't excuse the mistake. It doesn't make sense for them to be, they're in the exact same directory in every single mm-hmm. one.
Yeah.
And so he starts looking and he goes, "Oh Jesus, they're going after the money." So okay, duh. You're telling us something that we already know.
but again. When you look at the phrase, these are the list of accounts. This doesn't tell you they're taking money out. This is just a database of accounts. Like,
no,
just
well, we saw before the accounts that they're downloading the information from those accounts.
Well, yeah, I get it. But when you're looking at this, what it's saying, that's not, it's just, it's browsing the directories. I mean, again, it's a nit for people who aren't techie, but it makes no sense.
No, but again, when we've seen it in the past, so we saw where they were downloading the information from. These are the directories they're downloading stuff. It's not just browsing.
Right.
It's something we can't see in this shot. We don't see the because it's talking about how much is being downloaded and all of that. Because mm-hmm. When they started this whole thing, that was the whole idea that they only brought the truck to Woodlawn once they knew that stuff was getting close for them to be able to have it all on that hard drive. They wanted to download it all into.
Mm-hmm.
And so then Farrell looks around, he sees all of Emerson's equipment and decides what he's going to use to try to get into the hacking of everything. He does a whole bunch of hacking stuff, connecting wires, takes out his Palm Pilot again. He has a Palm Pilot, he takes out the his PDA that he's been using. He sees that it's now been 100% download complete on the screen. So he knows that everything's been transferred.
Hmm.
But he's frantically trying to do something. We don't know what. We'll have to wait and see. Mm-hmm. And then we get a shot of, we're back with Gabriel and Lucy, and Gabriel says, Gabriel just looks at her and, then picks up the walkie-talkie and goes, "You coming to get me, John? Is that the plan?" And then we see John on his side and goes, "Yep, that's my plan." He goes, "What makes you think I won't put a bullet in your daughter's head right now?" Because you're scared of me. John knows how to respond to these types of things. He goes, "Is that right? Mm-hmm. You think I'm afraid of you?" He goes, "Yeah, because otherwise she'd be dead already. Mm-hmm. You need a bargaining chip."
No, it makes sense. And what's funny about this is you're going to have a sort of a reminiscent call when, and it won't be in my minutes, but I do know coming up, Farrell will tell basically the same thing. Like, the chip I have over you is if I unlock this code, you're
going to kill me. Right.
So I think John knows the same thing. Like, if you were going to kill her, you would have done it already.
That's right.
And so it is kind of nice that in the sense the parallel, I guess, the kids learning from the master.
Makes sense. Again, if the idea was to hand over the baton to the techie aspect of Die Hard, then that would make sense.
Yeah.
You know, from
it's, it's sloppy, but at least it's there.
Yes. Very. And then Emerson runs into the way we see that Farrell's continuing with all his hacking stuff, and then Emerson runs into the room and goes, "Stop there, hands up." He goes, "If you kill me, you'll never get it open." And mm-hmm. Emerson gets closer and realizes that he actually is telling the truth. And we see that he has put a code in there that has. Do you see how many digits are on this code that he's added in there?
It's a 9, right? Like a social security.
That's right. It's a 9-digit code, which means that there are a total of basically almost 10 million combinations of what it could be. Meaning that there's no chance that they're going to be able to crack that very simply. You know, it shows that Farrell is a little smarter than we thought.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when it comes to these type of things. And then Emerson says, "Move away, move." And then we're back with Lucy and Gabriel. And Gabriel continues talking to us. "You know, John, I feel like we've gotten off on the wrong foot. And because of that, you think I'm the bad guy. And nothing could be further from the truth. I'm the good guy here. I told them this could happen if they didn't prepare. Did I get a thank you? No, I got crucified. But they wouldn't listen." And then John goes, "You got their attention now, don't you?" He goes, "That's right. I'm doing the country a favor. By tearing it apart, better me than some outsider, some religious nutjob bent on Armageddon. Nobody wants to see that happen. Everything I've broken can be fixed. If the country is willing to pay for it." Oh, bullshit. It's always been about the money. What? I shouldn't get paid for my work? I'm working my ass off here, John. Well, just sit tight. I got a check for you. It's a typical John response, you know, and I love how every shot that we're seeing of John, he's running, he's like working his way through the maze of this area, which again is typical. That is typical John McClane, you know, that he's in a building or he's in an airport or he's somewhere where he needs to maneuver his way through lots of tunnels and shafts and things like that. So it's nicely done. The way that they're doing this here, that they're having this conversation at the exact same time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's clever to do it this way. And every time they show Gabriel talking, they also show us Lucy, who's just sitting there quietly as the typical damsel in distress here. You know, she doesn't show any type of bravado that we saw beforehand when she punched Russo or anything like that.
No, it feels weird because from the time she's been onto them, she was introduced as being feisty.
That's right.
And she punches the dude, and they have to restrain her, and all of a sudden now she's docile.
Yeah. No, it's very, very strange. And also, didn't he send Rand to go kill him? But Rand is in the background.
Yeah.
You know, he said to Rand on Friday, he said, "I will give you my share if you kill this guy."
Right, and we see him kind of do that half smirk and like, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I guess maybe he meant at some point.
That's right.
Maybe not now. Oh, you mean now?
Exactly. And then Gabriel realizes that he's not getting anywhere with John, and he goes, "I can't talk to this guy." And then he takes the walkie-talkie and puts it in front of Lucy and goes, "You talk to him. See if you can get him to focus."
By the way, we just established that the laptop is completely downloaded, right?
Yes.
The monitor over his shoulder that's a little bit blurred, you keep seeing little lines get highlighted like they're being accessed and something being done. I don't know what's still going on the monitor, but I do find it interesting that the whole time over his shoulder, you see access lines of something being, I don't know what, but if it's all done downloading, I don't know what's showing on his screen.
Busy, busy, busy.
Mm-hmm.
That's all they can do. And then he gives the the walkie-talkie holds it in front of Lucy, and she goes, "Dad." He goes, "Hi, baby." And then she pauses a second, and she goes, "Now there's only five of them." So I guess that, she's sort of that... doing, she's doing what Russo did on Friday, you know, giving a little bit of information at their own peril, because they don't know how the other person is going to respond to something like that.
Mm. Well, and it also, you know, we just got done talking about her being a little docile. There you go. She's showing a little bit of that, well, what young daughters or young kids do, that recalcitrant, I'm just going to say the opposite, or I'm going to do the opposite just to kind of tick you off.
Yeah, more or less.
Mm-hmm.
And then John responds and goes, "Hang on, Lucy, I'm coming." And Gabriel just gets really pissed off about that.
Yeah, that's the second time he decides to slap her across the face.
That's right. And he just looks at her and smacks her.
It's another version of, you've already done it once, so now the second time is not nearly as, what are you, is that the, all you've got? And again, it's the writing and the character. He's doing what he was told as the director, from the director, from the script, but it's very cardboard. It's very two-dimensional. There's not a lot of depth here with the way he's behaving. It's very, it's like, write me a stereotypical bad guy who's trying to rob something, and, you know, he's not getting his way. And he's acting like the same, like, it seems very stereotypical.
Yeah, again, it just doesn't work well enough.
No, and it goes back to what you and I talked about at the beginning of our minutes here for the last couple of days. You know, Alan Rickman just did it in such a unique way. Everything seemed both charming and menacing at the same time. And Jeremy Irons, same thing. There was believability to their actions. I feel in this sense, he's kind of just going through the motions.
Because he doesn't have any control here.
Yeah, and it's not because he's a bad actor. I think he's just younger at this point, but it's so contrived the way it's written. It just, there's nothing unique about this character. There's nothing that makes him stand out.
Right. Again, one of the things is he's also a little bit, you can see he's borderline crazy, but with all the other villains that we've seen up until now, none of them were crazy. They were evil, but they weren't crazy.
Right.
He looks like he's you know, on the edge with what he's doing here, especially with the way that he just tried explaining everything. You know, I warned them. I told them they had to listen to me. They didn't listen to me, so now they're gonna have to pay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Where's the sanity in saying something like that?
But even then, the actor, if that's the case, if he did want to convey the sense that he was maybe maniacal, he doesn't really convey threat to me. I don't sense, I never feel like he's a menacing character.
Right. And John is not afraid of him either. John right. had his, you know, John was somewhat concerned about the other three villains. This one, he's not concerned about at all. Mm-hmm. And this one has his daughter as a hostage, you know, from an early standpoint, I guess you can say. Mm-hmm. Meaning in the original Die Hard, Hans only realized that he had this chip right at the very end. You know, Gabriel right. knows the chip that he's holding, and he sees that John just doesn't care.
Well, even as you mentioned, even his whole monologue about, you know, I did this because I told them and they're going to pay. Wouldn't you rather me than somebody who's going to try to blow up the world and blah, blah, blah. It just sounds like a monologue. It doesn't right. sound, I mean, it's not even a well-delivered. It's just, I memorized my lines.
That's right.
And again, I don't know what the direction, I'm not, because you've already heard me say it multiple times, I like Timothy Olyphant as an actor. I just, he's not giving me a whole lot here.
No. Not enough. And then he takes the walkie-talkie and then says, "Would somebody please kill this son of a bitch? Now, again, why does that make any sense that he would do that? Russo is out of commission. Okay, you have Emerson that's out there. Rand is behind him. And then you have Trey and one other goon. And that's it. You know, and so he's in the room with four out of five of the guys. Emerson's mm-hmm. the only one who's not there. And he says, "Would somebody please kill this other man?" So yeah. He must only be talking to Emerson, because that's the only possibility. And then Emerson actually comes into the room holding... Barrel, you know, dragging him in. So apparently nobody was listening to him on the walkie-talkie except
for Because yeah, because he doesn't have it. He's holding the kid and he's holding the briefcase in the other hand.
That's right. And he comes into the room and goes, "We have a problem."
Mm-hmm.
And then the response is, "No, there's actually no problem. I think I just got off on the wrong floor." You know, Farrell's trying to throw in a little bit of humor here.
He's trying to pull a John McClane.
Yes.
That's such an interesting thought you said today, and I know we talked about it in the 2 days ago. It's almost, if you give it the excuse of, if you read the lines, is this kid supposed to take the mantle over? His arc is, you starting to pick up on some of these things that are more John McClane-ish, but obviously they never went forward with that idea after this movie. But I do think that that's an interesting idea. They may have had that as a goal of the movie had it done better.
Right. True. And it didn't.
No.
You know, it didn't really work out for them.
No.
And at this point, no one is laughing. And then Trey opens up the laptop and sees that we have a 9-digit code, and it says that it's a 1024-bit encryption algorithm.
Mm-hmm.
And then Trey says, "This is a mess."
Okay.
Now, how does that really help by him saying something like that? And then Farrell goes, "Wow, I'm truly impressed, man. Hacking every byte of financial data for the entire country would take weeks unless you eliminated the congestion. That's what this fire cell is all about, isn't it?" That's mm-hmm. brilliant. So again, he's sort of trolling him.
So here's the problem with that. And again, you wouldn't know it if you weren't into the encryption side. And from my background, having been once upon a time naval intelligence, you talked about a 10-digit key, but now you're using 1024-bit encryption. So what that means is the key size itself, what you're looking for, is a key that's basically 10 to the 308th power. Not 1 billion, because that would be 10 to the 10th power. This is 10 to the 308th power. So that's a big number.
Yeah.
It's not 9 digits.
Well, again, it's another inconsistency.
just pointing that out for all the tech geeks out there.
Right.
That would be a strong encryption. And at the time, that absolutely would be super strong. You would have to have a massive number to unlock the system. And the idea of you trying to hack that number, today's AI is going to get a lot faster at doing stuff like that. And that's actually the scary part about AI. But at the time of this, that would be considered at the point in time unhackable.
Right. And Gabriel, I love his response. He goes, "Yes, it is. Please be quiet."
Mm-hmm. Now, to be clear, we don't use 1024-bit encryption anymore because today's systems are so much faster and more powerful. They have to go even bigger than that.
Right.
So just I don't want anybody hearing me say that, "Oh, that's no." At the time of the movie, that part was correct.
Well, again, we know that most of the technology from this movie is completely outdated, in the 18 years since this movie came out. and then he just mutters under his breath. And then Lucy just looks at him and goes, "Who are you?" He goes, "Matt Farrell." She goes, "Lucy McLean." He goes, "Hey, I thought your name was Gennaro." "Lucy Gennaro." He goes, "Not today."
Mm-hmm. Once again, it seems like that's a cheap callback to the first movie.
Yes. Yes. Completely. Apparently, all Gennaros end up becoming the plane. They get into situations where they finally want to reclaim the name McLean.
Mm-hmm.
So they're trying to give us a little moment between the two of them, which just doesn't work at all. What they do at the end of the movie is even worse, the way that they... try to get a little bit of gooey and gushy between the two of them, which just doesn't fit in. And at this point, then we're back with Gabriel, and Gabriel turns to Trey and goes, Can you crack the code? He goes, maybe. I mean, if I had enough time. Now, his response should have been, well, you didn't bring me here for my charming personality, did you?
Now, that would have been so obvious a callback. Oh.
But it was such a better response than maybe, I mean, if I had enough time. And he goes, oh, that's mm-hmm. encouraging. And he goes, all right, we're going to take them with us. Let's go. And then Trey says, hey, Gabriel, Pentagon just sent an F-35 towards us. And he goes, all right, keep an eye on it. Pulling down the go codes now.
How would they know an F-35 got diverted?
Because they got a message saying that it's now been diverted to Woodlawn. Oh, yeah, we're in Woodlawn. What do you know? Now, there's no way of knowing. It just doesn't make any sense.
Like, what system would tell them, hey, guys that work at this special secure NSA facility that you broke into, DOD has dispatched a jet to your area?
That's right.
It's oh, I'm sorry.
No, I agree with you. And as we find out that Trey is trying to get the go codes, this segment ends.
Mm.
Thankfully.
Mercifully.
Mercifully. Completely.
Look, the best thing, I'm gonna try to find a way to make it make sense. The what's on the laptop screen. The most if you have to shoehorn this, that there's a 10-digit code to open the laptop screen to then allow him to use the 1024-bit encryption key to match what the encryption key on the system was. In other words,
right.
it's an unlock code, and then you still would need to install the matched algorithm that has, 10 to the 308th power number of options. So maybe if you go that route, but that's not what happens later in the movie. So, all right.
Yeah, they didn't think about that part.
No, I don't think they thought it through. I just think they had some cool looking code and they thought that looks good. That sounds techy enough. That'll work.
Yeah, let's hope. And so that's the end of this segment. Did you have anything else you wanted to add about this particular segment?
No.
Okay.
No, just my overall thought is just. I tell this to clients when we do video shoots all the time. Your cheapest edit, your cheapest day in this production, from this day forward, is pre-production. The writing of the script, the locking down the information, making sure you know exactly what we're doing day to day. Because once we're on set, that's the last time you want to start trying to figure out what you've done wrong or hadn't thought about. That goes for writing the script. The cheapest way to make a movie better is make sure you got a good script to start with before you start filming.
Right. Makes sense. Definitely makes sense. All right. So today's segment is a game called 6 Degrees of Bruce Willis. Okay. So
okay.
I'm assuming that you're familiar with the idea of 6 Degrees of Kevin Bacon. It's the same idea. I'm going to give you the name of an actor and you have to connect that actor to Bruce Willis.
Okay.
Via as few connections as possible. All right. So okay. I've chosen 5 of these. And so your first one will be Gene Wilder.
Gene Wilder. Ooh. Okay. So now I got to figure out how many steps between Gene Wilder or somebody Gene Wilder acted with to get to...
Bruce Willis.
Right? Is that what you mean? Gene Wilder, the connection. Gene Wilder was in obviously directed by Mel Brooks. Gene Wilder, Mel Brooks. Mel Brooks, what was he doing? Did he do something with Bruce Willis? And voiceover counts?
Yeah, sure. You can use voiceover.
So I guess, what's it called? Look Who's Talking. Look Who's Talking, the second one.
Ah, that's great. Yes. Look Who's Talking to. He played the voice of the toilet, and was Mikey. Excellent, great job.
Yes, I knew Bruce Willis was the kid in both of them. So okay, cool. All right, that was tough.
Okay, I know, but I'm glad you got it done.
That was amazingly hard.
All right. The next one
what's
is
the next one?
Mel Gibson.
Mel Gibson to Bruce Willis.
Yes.
So, all right. So I'll play along. So, Mel Gibson to Bruce Willis. So Mel was in lots of movies, but connecting to Bruce Willis. So if we go with Maverick as a possibility, that had James Garner and Jodie Foster. Jodie Foster, go down that. If you go, what's the movie where it's about the cowboy actor? James Garner and Bruce Willis. I can't remember the name of the movie.
Sunset.
There we go.
Excellent. See, you're
dude,
you're
this
good
is
at it.
Tough.
You're good at
this
it.
This is tough.
Yeah. All right. Your next one is Robert Shaw.
Oh my gosh, Jaws.
Bruce Willis was not in Jaws, even though the name of the shark was Bruce.
Oh, let's see. Robert Shaw to Bruce Willis. Let's see. Robert Shaw was in The Sting. Robert Shaw was in Jaws. Robert Shaw was in James Bond. Wait, was Bruce Willis, did he act with Paul Newman in something?
Yes, he did.
Okay. I don't remember the name of the movie, but I know if we go with The Sting, then it's got to be Paul Newman. So it's got to be Robert Shaw to Paul Newman and some movie they were both in together, but I don't remember the name.
It's called Nobody's
something...
Fool.
Yeah, Nobody's Fool. There you
it's
go.
A great movie. It's one of my favorite movies. Just amazing. All right.
Okay.
Okay, you're
okay, so, hey, I did that one pretty quickly.
Excellent. Excellent work. All right, the next one is Mark Hamill.
Ooh, Luke Skywalker. Corvette Summer, maybe? No. Mark Hamill. Okay, well, we'll say, because you seem to be like picking at least more of the well-known movie, so who else was in Star Wars? Mark Hamill. Carrie Fisher goes to John Belushi. No. Let me see. No, hey. I know. No. Hold on. Harrison Ford was in one of those Expendables movies.
That is correct. Yes.
But was he in the same one that... Was he in one that Bruce Willis was in? Oh, see, now I don't know, because I know Bruce Willis was in one of the Expendables movies, but I don't know which one. That's what I was thinking. Star Wars, Mark Hamill, Harrison Ford to Bruce Willis in Expendables, but I don't know if they were in the same one, because they did, what, like four of those?
Wasn't Bruce Willis in all of them?
I don't know. Was he? I didn't see any of them. I have not seen
anything.
Any of them. I think, only didn't they bring, I thought they only brought.
No, but you can even use the fact that he was in the Expendables 3, you can use that to get to Bruce Willis from that perspective.
Oh, right, because then he would have been with Sylvester Stallone, who would have been in all the Expendables
movies.
Right.
Exactly.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
So that's great. So the one that I was thinking of is Mark Hamill was in Jane Silent Bob Strike Back with either Kevin Smith or Ben Affleck. Kevin Smith obviously is in this movie with Bruce Willis,
right.
And Ben Affleck was in Armageddon with Bruce Willis.
So here's a crazy thing. I've never seen that Kevin Smith flick, but I'm aware of it, and I don't know why I haven't seen it, because I should, but I've never watched it.
Okay. And the final one for you is Cleavon Little.
Ooh. Well, we can just use the same thing with Gene Wilder, because Cleavon Little was in Blazing Saddles with Gene Wilder. Gene Wilder was in Young Frankenstein with Mel Brooks. Mel Brooks was in Look Who's Talking to Bruce Willis.
Well, why do you even have to do that? Mel Brooks was in Blazing Saddles. You could just skip that.
Oh yeah, I guess so.
Go
Yeah,
through
you're right. You're
Gene
right. You're
Wilder.
right. Darn, you're right.
There you go.
Because I got my head stuck in Gene Wilder.
Okay, that's fine. I understand that. That's perfectly okay. All right, excellent. Thank you very much for that.
Dude, that's a fun game, but I'm telling you what, it taxes my brain in a way that I don't usually, like, I don't see those connections.
I
That
know.
was hard.
I know.
But I mean, I
Okay.
loved it. Don't get me wrong, I loved it. It was hard. I hope the audience was okay with all the pauses.
Yeah, it's fine. Okay, and now we will play State Your Motto once again, and this time you have the state of Nevada.
Okay.
All right, so your choices are A, all for our country, B, the welfare of the people is the highest law, or C, state sovereignty, national unity.
Give me those one more time.
Allow for our country, sorry, all for our country, the welfare of the people is the highest law, and state sovereignty, national unity.
Okay, I'm going to eliminate number two, which means it's probably the answer, but I'm going to say it's not number two. All for our country, or what was that
State
last one?
sovereignty, national unity.
Okay, I'm going to go with the first one. It seems a little bit cleaner for the
And
Southwest.
you
All
would
for
be
our country.
correct. You're right.
Woo!
Excellent. So you get
All
two out of
right,
three.
I'll take that.
There you go. Excellent.
Oh, geez, this was tough, dude. This was harder than analyzing the movie, and the movie's not that great, so that was already hard.
You go. All right. So, Alan, would you like to one final time for this half of the season? Tell everyone where they can find Alan Sanders.
If you're into news talk, I'm not going to try to convert anybody. I'm just going to try to tell you from my perspective what I think's going on day to day. You can check out the Alan Sanders Show. It is a news talk format, but at least it'll get you caught up on what happened that while you were working all day. Just look in your favorite podcatcher and look for the Alan Sanders Show, and it's spelled ALAN. It's a four-letter word, so the Alan Sanders Show.
All right, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. Find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram, you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So thank you very much, Alan.
Yeah.
It's been a lot of fun discussing these 15 minutes of this movie with you.
It's been phenomenal, and kind of a nice way to do a bigger chunk like this. How have you felt about it with this season nine?
I'm glad that I've done it for these two movies. I'll put it that way.
Okay.
But I'm for season 10, I'm going back to the 1 minute slot.
Okay.
Much,
All right.
much, much more
All right.
fun.
Well, I'm looking forward to being on the back half of the season as we dive into the worst possible of the Die Hard movies.
Yes, for sure. All right, so until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay.
Some folks are born made to wave the flag. Oh, they're red, white, and blue, yeah. But it ain't me. It ain't me. I ain't no fortunate one.